The promise of a new beginning for Libya could be slipping away. Despite months of negotiations and preparations, the country's first presidential elections won't happen as planned. So after 10 years of war and conflict, has the political process and dialogue failed? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. Libya was among the Arab Spring nations, and since the revolution toppled the government a decade ago, it has not known peace or political stability. But after months of arduous negotiations and international mediation, there were fresh hopes for the future. Warring sides signed a UN-sponsored ceasefire deal, formed a unity government, and agreed to hold elections on December the 24th. But the head of the Electoral Commission has now dissolved all electoral committees just days before polling stations were due to open. Now the future for Libya is again unclear, and the UN peace plan hangs by a thread. Malik Trina has this report from the capital, Tripoli.
We're just a few days away from the scheduled first round of presidential elections in Libya, and it's becoming clear that the vote will be delayed. But there hasn't been a government institution or any senior officials that have been willing to announce the postponement. The Electoral Commission, the High National Electoral Commission, has said that it's the parliament's responsibility to announce the postponement. The parliament has turned back and said, no, it's the Electoral Commission that should come and tell the Libyan people why there was a postponement. And there's also been a lot of controversial figures that have put in their bid to become to run in the presidential elections, including Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi, Muammar Gaddafi's second son. He's wanted by the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. You have Khalifa Haftar in eastern Libya, who's also been accused of war crimes in his failed attempt to capture the capital Tripoli militarily. And you have Prime Minister Abdelhamid Abeba, the current Prime Minister, who, when he took on the position, signed a promissory note that he wasn't going to run for elections. So for now, what's clear is that these elections aren't going to happen, and we're waiting for an official announcement by the Electoral Commission or the Parliament. Malik Trina for Inside Story.
We'll bring in our guests in a moment, but first, let's take a look at how we got to this point. Libya has been in turmoil since an uprising toppled Muammar Gaddafi in October 2011. In the years after that, different political groups backed by international powers competed mostly through violence to gain control. In 2015, the Government of National Accord, the GNA, was formed based in Tripoli in the West. And with backing from the United Nations, it was meant to serve as an interim government and lead Libya out of its turmoil. But the following year, the Tobruk-based administration in the East, backed by the warlord Khalifa Haftar, voted against approving the GNA, and cooperation between both ends of Libya broke down. Since then, there have been years of war and attempts by Haftar to take control of the capital by force. Finally, and after months of UN-backed negotiations, the two sides agreed on a ceasefire in March and formed a unity government pending elections this month. Let's bring in our guest. Joining us from Paris is Mustafa Feitouri, a journalist who is specialist in Libya politics. From London, Anas Al-Ghomati, General Director of Libya-based think tank Sadiq Institute. From Kuwait, Yasmin Hasnawi, an expert in North Africa affairs and board member with the Institute of Saharan Studies, Al-Andalus. Thank you for joining us. Mustafa, the general feeling was that basically 24th of December was going to be the culmination of a mammoth task that started years ago that would have paved the way for presidential elections. And that was going to be the moment when people were going to say, violence and instability is over. That is not happening anymore.
First of all, Hashim, thank you for having me. You are right, it's not happening anymore. And even if a last-minute dash is dreamt of somehow by the local actors or international actors, in this case, it would be quite difficult, logistically speaking, as well as legally. The Election Commission has failed so far to publish the final list of the contestants of the presidential election, as well as it was deemed, it was required by law to give them some time to campaign, something like 2 weeks' time to campaign for the elections. And that time never been granted, as well as the permission to do so, to do the campaigning, has never been given by the commission. So there is no election 24th of December, that's for sure.
Anas, the commission, the election commission, had dissolved all the local committees. The decision to delay the election, was it purely a domestic issue? Do you think international intervention plays a role here?
I think it goes without saying, Libya has become a theatre for great power competition, and that not all the decisions that are taken by even local actors are indeed for local reasons. And I think that's where so much of this of today's kind of conundrum of deciding whether or not Libyans have elections, which of the Libyan institutions are going to be in the deciding, kind of in the driving seat of that decision, tells you a lot about Libya's history with foreign actors. Many of the local actors themselves that were responsible for fighting in the last several years were actually mercenaries who didn't hold the emblem of either a Libyan faction or even an international faction, but were working on behalf of international actors. That's just a symptom of the wider kind of interference in this process. And what comes to the root of this is that the actual sequence of events since January 2020, since the Berlin process that decided there was going to be an end to the conflict and the beginning of a new chapter, so much international interference has taken place. The local actors, as you've rightly mentioned, the Electoral Commission has dissolved its local committees. But it's just the crisp or the crest of the tide. I mean, it's really not of the wave. It's not really the deeper endemic symptoms of what's been going on for several weeks. Many of the factors come to measure by the new actors that have emerged, like Saif al-Islam and Gaddafi, who is disruptive to the kind of settlement that many international actors have been trying to preside over, a two horse race, not a three horse race. The actual Supreme Court has been mute for several, not months, but years, in fact, and has now been reshaped and reassembled and brought to fore. But if it comes out and gives a determination on the candidates, it has to give a determination on the process. There are so many shaky and faulty foundations to this election that we can't just label it just to the or put the responsibility at the Electoral Commission.
Yasmin, should we be concerned about what's next for Libya?
Well, actually, first of all, anyone who has been following the Libyan conflict can easily pinpoint, perceive and say that would question the very possibility of conducting fair and transparent elections. And this is due, first of all, to several divisive figures, the candidacies of Eastern Military Chief Haftar and Saif Gaddafi, both accused of war positions from, rival camps. So there is, and also because of the lack of agreement over the powers of the next government, which have posed a series of obstacles. So I think that in terms of, on the ground, there is, in terms of the situation on the ground, there are many Libyan citizens themselves who want the elections. They want the vote. They did not want the vote on a specific date. These people did not sign up on a specific date. So I think that, I would call it a technical delay of the election is not something that will cause significant tension at the level of the population, as it might cause, however, tension and maneuvering at the level of the not only the political class, but also the armed groups. So the fight is now over the electoral process for whoever controls what happens next. So I think that whatever has been done by the UN representative Stephanie needs to continue, but I would put it really as a technical delay.
Mustafa, was it a major failure of the legal institutions of Libya They said to some candidates, you won't be able to run for the presidential elections because you don't meet the standards or you have pending legal issues. And then they were reinstated. And then we boiled down to meeting the deadline of December 24th. Something terribly wrong happened. And then they decided, you know what? It's better for Libya not to go for presidential elections.
Well, I don't really Hashim, see it as a failure of the judiciary in the country, because the judiciary is actually not very concerned about this, or I rather should say shouldn't have anything to do with this business, except for the legal wrangling that have taken place early on in the stage of candidates submitting their files to the commission for the presidential election. And the other side also, we have seen the judiciary, the courts, at least in two cases, the case of Saif al-Islam and Sabhan, Mr. Khalifa Haftar to a certain extent in Zawiya also, played their role nicely and quietly despite the hurdles they faced, especially in Sabah, where judges could not access the court building for a few days. But they did finally, and they decided what should be done. I mean, they decided that legally speaking, which is their role, Saif al-Islam or Mr. Gaddafi does not, Mr. Haftar does not have any problems in running for the courts. If they have some kind of legal problems, I don't think those judges, you know, who gave them the green light would have hesitated to give them the red light. So the judiciary should be out of this. And the other side, you know, on the other hand, it's not the job of the judiciary of the country to decide politically if this candidate is a divisive figure or not, or can he actually govern the country if he wins the election. It's not their business. Mm-hmm. What is happening now, they try to, you know, the different local political actors, they are trying to blame the judiciary, whereby the fault was, in my thinking, is shared between the election commission, as well as the parliament, who passed some laws that have been criticized as flawed.
Okay. Anas, yes, the UN said it was crucial for Libya to have presidential elections. Yes, the international community said it was paramount for stability in the country. But when you end up having three key players, Dbeiba, Haftar and Saif al-Islam al-Qaddafi, people were pretty much concerned that the winner most likely was just going to further tear apart Libya. So it's better not to have elections than to have elections with the divisive figures.
Well, I certainly think those divisive figures, as you've rightly mentioned, bring the prospect. Two of them, certainly, because they are military figures or military figures who use tribes, Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi and Khalifa Haftar, they certainly bring the prospect of more war, not more peace. And to go back to what your other guest, Mustafa Fethouri, was saying about the court is not there to decide whether or not they're politically acceptable. The court is there to decide whether they're really acceptable and whether or not they're criminals or not. And in both cases, in fact, in all three cases, there's good evidence to suggest that all of them have committed various crimes of different natures. Saif al-Islam has been found guilty in absentia, I think, or 2015, for his role in 2011. Khalifa Haftar has left Libya covered in crime scene tape over the last several years. I mean, there are still mass graves that are being uncovered. I don't think anyone is under the illusion that he was not responsible for it. His own forces have been sharing those things on Facebook and on social media for years. And Ahmed Dbeiba also has, you know, financial questions around his role in the LPDF in the beginning of the year, but also how he amassed and his clan amassed billions over several years. But the real question today is whether, and also the second part is that the parliament hasn't passed the law. The HOR hasn't passed the law. The chief speaker of the law of the parliament, Aguila Saleh, an ally of Khalifa Haftar, he passed his own law without going through parliament. So when we come to the idea of not only who these candidates are in their divisive nature, it's not just that. These are conditions conducive to peace. They're not conditions, in fact, conducive to democracy. You have no constitutional basis in a country with a legacy for strongmen who never leave power and use violence to stay in power. The second aspect is that they're presiding over a divided state, which is entirely absurd, because you could elect someone to be your president, but it doesn't preside over a subservient state. It doesn't preside over a military that is going to accept their command and their orders. These are the military factions that decide which side they want to obey and not the state that they want to obey. So it also makes no sense from a state building perspective, and especially not given in January 2020, they began a state building process that was supposed to culminate with elections, not begin with elections. Mm-hmm. The real question I have today is not are elections being delayed or postponed for political expedience or to have wrong candidates, divisive or less divisive. It's what kind of state do you want to bring in? Is this going to usher in this process today or in 2 weeks or in two years or even two decades? Would it usher in a democracy? Would it allow Libyans to fulfill their democratic rights, or would it rob them of their democratic right? Because today it sounds more likely that they would be robbed of their democratic right.
Yasmin, the international community was hoping to have presidential elections that would bring about someone that would ultimately unify Libya. When you look at the profiles of the three candidates, it seems very much clear no one would be able to unify a Libya that has been divided for quite some time.
Well, actually, since November 2020, when the decision was made to have the elections on December 24th, the initial plan was to hold the presidential and parliamentary election on the same day. But we're talking about the international community. Over the last year, that day have become something, I would put it as a holy grail. The international focus on these elections in a way that was quite striking, as there was very little discussion, very little thought on what would Libya look like post elections. They did not mention these people. I mean, from a European perspective, it has been very interesting to see how the Europeans have been, battling for relevance since after Haftar failed the Tripoli offensive. And we have seen also, of course, the French and the Italian coming together. But I think what is important, what is more important now, is that we see how Turkey and Russia, which are still the main external power brokers inside Libya. What has been really happening is really interesting in the last few days. We have seen countries that have been, constantly dropping references to December 24th, whether, in their announcement or public announcement. So there has been a very, noticeable difference in language. But what is interesting earlier this week is that look how, the foreign minister of Russia, he said that Moscow would not have any problems in delaying, elections, if that means that the elections would happen in an effective way. So, in fact, Russia is the only international player so far that has come out and said something about those elections. So I think that the international community did not mention much these people, rather than, they were not, they felt that, the international, the Libya is not ready for the
in the meantime,
for the elections. Yes.
Mustafa, in the meantime, should the interim government step in to prevent any power vacuum in Libya?
Well, that's a very difficult question. There is a lot of debate about the issue of having a different government than the current one, which will be a caretaker government. But then you have to have that. For you to have a different government, first of all, it has to be commonly accepted, widely accepted, and I don't think that will happen easily. Today, the information I'm getting from Tripoli, the capital itself, there's a lot of mobilization of militias, armed militias, with huge armaments around different parts of the city, especially western parts of the city and eastern parts of the cities as well. Mr. Dbeibah has gained some popularity through, dubious ways, and many suspect, accuse him of wasting public money in his own election campaign. And because of that popularity, he has created some kind of a base for him. Removing him now without actually having a precise plan as to what is the next goal will be quite a difficult thing to do. It could spark, something like internal fight among the supporting militias themselves that support Mr. Dbeibah currently, especially those in the capital of Tripoli.
Okay.
And, of course, as in his Masrat and base as well.
Anas, the rationale behind this whole political process was basically following these premises. First of all, to bridge the divide, we need to have a national unity government. And then we have to have a presidential council, hoping that one day we'll have a president who will be the strong man of Libya. That would pave the way for parliamentary elections, and then we'll have vibrant political parties taking over, and then democracy would prevail in Libya. That's not happening anytime soon. Do you have any concerns that could pave the way for more anarchy in a place like Libya?
Well, I think we have to have a sequence process that tackles the reasons why many of the actors can go to war. There's no danger of someone like Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi or Khalifa Haftar, the two that have an authoritarian legacy in Libya, of becoming authoritarians if the institutions themselves are not owned by their tribal kin, by their children, as has been the case now for Khalifa Haftar or Saif al-Islam's brothers, as they previously controlled the army. If you have an institution that is neutral, then you're okay. And that's what really needs to happen. It's not about Libyans themselves wanting to go to war with each other. It's the capacity to bring war because foreign states are backing you. In the case of many of the actors, Saif al-Islam, today it's Russia. Khalifa Haftar has been Russia, the United Arab Emirates, and France. But, you know, Abdelhamid Dbeibah, I wouldn't say has the same capacity to wage war, though I would agree with what someone like Mustafa Toure has mentioned in terms of his capacity to just canvass for votes using populism and using money that has been badly spent over the last year. But all of those things aside are just distractions. The real root cause here is that the militia formations themselves are not going to be unified if we have a political unity government or a combination of three or a little bit of east, a little bit of west, a little bit of south. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. The reality on the ground is that if those two military factions that came to an agreement in October 2020 to stop fighting under the UN, but have not bridged the divide to unify under a subservient state, then Libya is going to have another war, okay, irrespective of whether you have elections today, tomorrow, or in a day. The proof is going to be in the pudding. And I think unless they prioritize the state building and the neutralization of how spoilers can spoil the political military process and drag Libya back to war, then we're always going to be at square one. I would argue that we've never left square one.
Yasmin, in the meantime, I mean, waiting for the authorities to come back again and say we'll have elections scheduled for January, February, or March, do you think that the militias, the foreign troops, the mercenaries, the warlords, tribesmen, those who have benefited from the chaos in Libya, will use this for more political leverage?
Of course they will, but business as usual is not longer an option. I mean, it will be very delusional to believe that a smooth transition to democracy through transparent and fair elections is possible while these people, these thousands of foreign forces and mercenaries are still roaming the country. So that's why we're speaking about it. If it is a technical delay, be it. As long as there are these thousand foreign mercenaries, I think that the situation will stay the same. So only when foreign mercenaries and forces are compelled to leave can Libya regain its sovereignty and hope to recover from its, debilitating decade-long war. So besides the disastrous consequences that this scenario would have on the well-being and livelihood of Libya, people on the viability of Libya as an independent and sovereign state, I think prolonging the conflict will provide the ground for the Islamic State and other terrorist groups in the region.
In less than a minute, Mustafa, do you think that the divide that we've been talking about for quite some time, east-west, is now becoming more of a divide between East, where you have Haftar, West, where you have internationally recognized government, South, where you have Gaddafi loyalists?
Well, I'm not sure, but the division is always there. And the point of the possibility that, somebody as a president could unify the country, that will never happen in the short time or even in 10 years' time. The country is deeply divided because of politics mainly and because of the foreign interference, from foreign powers. Is there going to be a rush to war, for example, or something like this? I don't think there will be. There is no momentum and nobody's interested in the war now, but that does not mean it is not an option on the table right now. And as I said, mobilization is quite high in Tripoli today.
Thank you, Mustafa.
And any spark could end it. Yes,
well,
thank you.
Quite interesting to look into the different elements of the Libyan puzzle. Mustafa Feitouri, Anas Al-Ghamati, Yasmin Hasnawi, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com, for further discussion. Go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJ Inside Story. For me, Hashim Ahlbala, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.